Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
When it comes down to it, what are we at our core? We are North American waterfowl.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of the North American Waterfowler Podcast. My name is Elliot. I am your host here as we approach our 100th episode. We're getting really, really close to 100 episodes, and I am just so excited that in just over a year, I've been able to get that much content to you, and I plan to continue to bring out the podcast. Right now, I am on a 6-podcast-a-month schedule. Is what I'm trying to do. So it's going to be Monday, Thursday, as 2 times a month, I release an episode on Thursday where I just talk about whatever's on my mind. I go through a comment of the week and where we have Woody's top 5. And so I am really excited as we roll into the second off season here, or as we roll into this off season, and everything that's going on with my retriever training. My wife and I, last Sunday, we put together a Georgie shrine in the podcast room here. So my podcast room, when we bought this place, is just absolutely perfect because there's a big master bedroom, and then there is a room that's attached to the master bedroom, and it's about 10 by 8 size-wise, something like that. I'm trying to just kind of guess as I look at it. And in this room, it's absolutely perfect. I've got my table with my podcast equipment. I've got my clothing tree with all my camo on it. I've got my charging station for my videography stuff. And then over on the side, I've got a whole wall there where I have filled with all Georgie's accomplishments, all her UKC ribbons, her Hunter Retriever Champion title plaque, and then some pictures that I pulled off of my phone that I wanted to put up there. And man, I'm just loving it. I've been meaning to kind of display her ribbons and everything for a while and just got around to it. I just love it. And I released a little reel on Instagram showing it. In fact, real soon, maybe when I get done with recording this, I'm going to record this whole room and what it looks like. So as I'm recording and you're listening, you can just kind of have in your mind kind of what it looks like in here. And then we are planning to do an overhaul of the design of this. The Georgie wall will stay, but we're planning on overhauling this thing. And I want to get some video involved real soon. So that's to come. So the first part of this podcast, I want to share with you something that I find remarkable. Very, very interesting. I have been watching a YouTube channel called Expedition Bible is the name of it. Now, as you know, I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. But I think anybody who is interested in archaeology would appreciate this YouTube channel. It goes around and it essentially takes old things that happen in the Bible, and then the creator of this channel travels to those areas, normally like Iraq, Kuwait, Turkey, those areas, and just kind of tries to investigate it. Did these events actually take place? Now, if we can prove that these events took place, it certainly doesn't mean that the Bible's true. It just means that it's fairly true as far as the historical information in the Bible in those instances. So proving that some of these things happen doesn't necessarily mean that the Bible's true, although I personally believe that it is. But it is interesting as her historical document to go back and know things based on the Bible, which was written in the first century AD. And so I was watching an episode, and on this episode, they were trying to figure out where exactly in the Middle East do we think Eden was, the Garden of Eden. Now, I'm going to read the passage from Genesis, and bear with me because this has got a really interesting ending to it. There's a passage in Genesis. It's Genesis 2, 10 through 14. It says, "A river watering the garden flowed from Eden. From there, it was separated into four headwaters. The name of the first was the Pishon. It winds through the entire land of Havilah, where there is gold. The gold of that land is good. Aromatic, resin, and onyx are also there. The name of the second river is the Gihon. It winds through the entire land of Cush. The name of the third river is the Tigris. It runs along the east side of Asher, and the fourth river is the Euphrates." So it names four rivers that come together, and right in that area is supposedly where the Garden of Eden was located. Now, if you look on a map today, you cannot find any area where four rivers come together. You can find where those three rivers come together, but the fourth one is absent. So the creator of the channel went over to, now this area, I should say, is right in where Kuwait, Iraq, Iran, they all form borders right in this area. And the owner or the creator of the YouTube channel went over there and started investigating. And he found the remnants of an old ancient river called Wadi-Rama, where the riverbeds are still there. And it flows out of the mountains and it comes down. And they actually, the cool thing about, because I think they're in Iraq at this point, they found this riverbed coming out of the mountains, and they were able, just in their four-wheel drive vehicle, to follow the riverbed for miles, miles. They drove in it. They followed it. Now, this no longer has running water in it for the vast majority of the time, but you can see where the riverbed is. You can actually see it on satellite images. And they followed this with their vehicle and just camped as they went along. And man, how much fun would that be to have an area in America where you could just travel on a vehicle? There was no roads, no fences. They were just like backcountry in it. And they were going, and they showed where they were camping along. This is deserty and everything. It just like, man, what a fun adventure, regardless of what they were trying to do. Like traveling in your vehicle for, I think they went like 800 miles or something. And they stopped several times the way and put up camps. And it was so cool. And they followed this thing all the way to where it would have flowed into these other rivers. So they found the place where four rivers, one being the Pishon, one being the Gihon, the other the Tigris, and the Wat-Aruma is the other one, which is no longer there. But they found exactly where these four rivers come together. And it's, like I said, southern Iraq, right into Kuwait, and it's right around where these rivers flow into the Persian Gulf. And here's the part I thought was so interesting. Right in that area where the Bible reports the Garden of Eden to be, guess what type of landscape it is? Over 7,000 square miles of Mesopotamian marshes. There's actually a culture of people that still, now they've lost a lot of these acreage, but it's still miles and miles and miles of marshland, the Mesopotamian marshes. And there is a group of people live there called the Marsh Arabs. And they have water buffalo as livestock, and they feed off fish and waterfowl. And I thought, well, of course. The Garden of Eden was located around and in some marshes. I mean, I cannot tell you how many duck hunters that I've talked to that say when they duck hunt, when they're in nature, when they're in the marshes, they can't help but feel and see God. And you may or may not believe that in your personal instances, but I feel it. I've had some of my closest moments to God in the marsh. Other people have talked about it. And I was like, well, are any of us really that surprised that the Garden of Eden was either in or extremely close to thousands and thousands of square miles of marshes, the Mesopotamian marshes? And I just had to laugh when I thought that. I was like, yeah, that's about right. That's about right. If I was God and I was setting up the Garden of Eden, that's about where I would put it. Engulfed in thousands of acres of square miles of marshes. How cool is that? And I got to wondering, I wonder if they still hunt that. I haven't done any research on it. So Google search it, Mesopotamian marshes, Marsh Arabs. It's a whole culture that is way different than what you would expect Middle Eastern cultures to be. They actually had a photo with a drone in this YouTube video of a, I don't know what kind of boat it was, but it looked like it had a long tail on it. And I'm like, yep, that's about right. So anyway, I thought it was funny. I wanted to share it with you guys. So moving on, I want to bring to you our partners today. And as I've said before, if you like what I'm doing here and you want to support this podcast, there's several ways that you can do it. The number one being frequent the partners. Final Approach, Motion Ducks, Onyx, hopefully soon to be. I've got a couple others I'd like to bring on board, but those are the three. Also, if you want to support me, you can go to patreon.com/freelanceduckhunting and join us over there for all sorts of extra content and perks for you. Go and check that out. So Final Approach, all of your gear as you head into off season and moving to next year, we know you're going to buy it. There are crazy discounts going on right now. FABrand.com, FDH10 is the discount code. Motion Ducks Spreader System, again, FDH10, best jerk rig on the market. And Onyx, revolutionizing the game. So let's go ahead and jump into the comment of the week. Then we'll take a real quick break. I've got a really awesome song I'd like to bring for you today. And then we will bring Woody on here for a Woody's Top 5. Now, this comment, I had someone, gosh, I wish I had written down the name. I forget who the name is, and I'm sorry, I typically like to read the names. But this comment came to me as a Facebook message, I believe. And this was shortly after I did the episode where I talked about the Kansas non-resident policies. And I made it clear that in my personal case, I don't feel overpressured when I hunt Kansas. And that doesn't land very well with a significant portion of Kansas residents. But that is my experience. I broke down my 20, see, I had 32 hunts. And what did I say? 20 of them were in the state and 12 were out of the state. And like 75% of my hunts, there was either virtually no pressure or almost no pressure. And then five of them, 25%. There was either significant pressure or enough pressure that I didn't really care for it. And from my personal experience, and this is year in, year out, when I'm out duck hunting in the Central Flyway in Kansas, I don't feel pressured. That is not everyone's experience. It's my personal experience. And that's all I can bring to you is my personal experience. So let me read the comment. He said, listen to your newest podcast. I definitely have to disagree with pressure. I live in, I'm not going to give the name of the city. The pressure this year has been unreal. I know a lot of that was condensing of hunters due to water, but this was by far the worst year we have had in a long time. I hunt midweek and there was always 4 to 8 times the amount of hunters in the same areas. I traveled way out west, same scenario. I did not travel east because that's usually the places where there is more hunters per capita on those places. But goodness gracious, I normally agree with the things you mentioned on your podcast in regards to Kansas, but I think your point of view on it was fairly nuanced. And for you to say Kansas has no pressure except for three public marshes on your platform is borderline irresponsible. But it's America and you can say what you please. I will still listen, but wanted to give you some feedback. I want to focus on that one sentence. And I talked back and forth with this individual, had a nice conversation with him about it. I want to focus on one particular section. It says, I normally agree with the things you mention on your podcast in regards to Kansas, but I think your point of view on it was fairly nuanced. I'm not quite sure how nuanced works in that, like what that actually means. And for you to say Kansas has no pressure except for three public marshes on your platform is borderline irresponsible. Well, I don't believe I said there is no pressure except for three public marshes on your platform. I did not say that. I said there are three and maybe four areas that I know are highly pressured. And if you go to those places, you can expect to have pressure, and I don't go to those places. But if you remember, I also said in the area that I hunt, which is not on one of those four, I know that there are multiple marshes on that area that are highly pressured, is what I said. So I did not say there is no pressure except for three public marshes.
My contention is, if you are willing to work and drive, you can find places to hunt in this state and have success that aren't overpressured. I've got 30 years of experience telling me that. And I don't know what to say. That's 30 years of experience. Have there been hunts in which there was too many people and it bothered me? Absolutely. But that is the minority of my experiences. And I don't understand how that's borderline irresponsible to say. I've got 30 years of experience in this state. And my hunts, for the large majority of my hunts, are simply not overpressured. I'm not making that up. My sample size is not small. I have hunted, I don't go way, way out west to hunt in this state, but I hunt right up the middle of the state, clear on over to the eastern side of the state, north and south. I hunt the 2/3 of the state that have the most pressure. I live in the 1/3 of the state with the most people per capita. And I don't know how to rectify these opinions because it's just not my experience. Now, I highly value not hunting around other people. If you have watched my YouTube videos, I call my hunt style full immersion because our goal, my goal, and I've said this multiple times, my goal is not to kill ducks. My goal is to kill ducks with their feet down with no one else around. That's my goal. Does that always happen? Heck no, it does not always happen. But my 30 years of experience tell me that I can find places that I don't feel the pressure of other people way more often than it's overpressured. And that's a generous comment to what I'm saying. And that's just my experience. I also said that there has absolutely been a huge rise in non-residents coming into the state in the past, since COVID, specifically since COVID. It kind of started with COVID. And I said, I think that needs to be addressed. I think the citizens of the state of Kansas deserve the upper hand in waterfowling in this state. I think that we deserve the priority. And I think that Kansas should do something to address that. I just don't like the proposed model of only hunting Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I know some great guys that I've run into that come up from Alabama, Georgia, and I think that they deserve at least once a year coming on a 5-day trip. It's too far for them to travel and only get 3 days. I just am not of the opinion that Kansas waterfowling, I should act like a pit bull over my dish about it. I love this sport, and I'm okay with people coming in from other states to enjoy what we have here. I'm okay with that. Some of these residents, not the person I talked to necessarily, but especially over on the refuge forums, you would think that non-residents are coming in here, going into people's homes and stealing their wives. I mean, they act as though non-residents are the root of all evil. And I don't get that point of view. I don't get it. Again, I want to be prioritized in this state. Maybe go with the South Dakota model where it's a lottery and the state decides, hey, how many people can we handle? For what duration can we handle them? And we put a lottery in there, a fairly generous lottery. But these people that are acting as though non-residents are, and I'm not kidding, you can go and you can watch the commission meetings to some of these guys speaking about their experiences. They portray non-resident hunters as though they're criminals. I'm not joking about that. The stories that they tell and the way that they talk on the forums, they portray non-residents like they're bums, the worst people on the earth, criminal. That's how they portray them. I don't get it. I don't get it. I see them more as brethren. Again, I live in Kansas. I want to be prioritized over them. It's my backyard, my area. But they're brethren. They're not the enemy. And I just don't get it. I really don't. And how this person's experience can be so vastly different than mine, I'm not even going to speculate on the reason why. I just can tell you that's not my experience. I've got a patron named Alex Dupree from South Carolina that came in and hunted by himself for a week. That wasn't his experience. Jake from Chasing Green comes in and hunts a lot. He maybe he's thinking about moving here. That's not his experience. Aiden, the golden boy, killed damn near 300 ducks this year. It's not his experience. I can go down the list. My friend Matt that comes in from Missouri to hunt, it's not his experience. He had one hunt that he felt extremely overpressured. He's coming in from Missouri, crossing through the where the most hunters in the state are. That's not his experience. My friend Philip Boyle, it's not his experience. It's not just me. Everyone that I know, that I talk to closely, I don't know personally a friend or waterfowl hunter, whether they're a resident in this state or a non-resident coming into this state. Alan from Black Belt Waterfowl lives in Alabama, comes in. It's not his experience. So I don't know. Those of you that this just really ruffles your feathers, you Kansas residents, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not the only one that doesn't have these pressure experiences. It's to the point where when we go hunting, we joke about it. As we're killing ducks with maybe, you know, a few other groups around, but nothing that bothers us at all. We joke about, sure is pressured around here. I don't know what to tell you. But I can only report my 30 years of experience and every other person that I personally know that hunts in this state and their experience. So I want to keep what we have. Kansas is a fantastic waterfowling state, and I want to keep what we have and I want it preserved. And I do think we need to address the number of non-residents coming in. Just not the way they're doing it. Not the way they're going about it. So I guess that's all I have to say about that. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. As we go to break, I'm going to play a little bit of this song for you from Morrissey. The name of the song is The World is Full of Crashing Boars. We'll be right back in just a moment.
You must be wondering how the boy next door turned out. Have a care, but don't stare, because he's still there lamenting. Policewomen, policemen, silly women, taxmen, uniformed whore. They who wish to hurt you work within the law. Because he's still there lamenting. Policewomen, policemen, silly women, taxmen, uniformed whores. Educated criminals work within the law.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Well, thank you for coming back with me. We've got one section left. Let's go ahead right now and get into Woody's Top 5.
All right, boys, let's get this wrapped up so we can get back to hunting. It's Woody's Top 5 Countdown.
Right, we've got Woody here for another edition of Woody's Top 5. Take it away, buddy.
Hey, all right. Listen, I'm excited tonight. I've got a list here. Now, normally I know we tend to do the top five, and this one, I just couldn't narrow it down. I got out there and did a little research on the internet, and just going by things I've seen, things I've read, just some ideas that I had, I come up with. Tonight, it's really the top 10 instead of the top 5. I hope that's all right. I hope I don't mess up the program too much. But we'll go ahead and say that the top 10 best duck boat names that I've seen or heard or come up with myself. Top 10 best duck boat names. Because, you know, if you go down to the – I know you went down there to Louisiana. Was that last year you went down there?
This last spring, yep.
Yeah, I went out there and – if you ever walk down the boat dock at some of them places, every boat's got some kind of funny name painted on it. Hmm. You know, they've all got their own little name on the back of the boat. Well, I feel like duck hunters ought to be able to do that too. I think we ought to have some funny names to put on our boats. So
I come up with
a few here for folks, and they can, if anybody wants to steal one of these, you feel free. Number one, or I'll say number 10, I reckon. I got them all written down here. Number 10 is the bill collector. I think that's kind of funny. The bill collector. Kind of a little double entendre there.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Bill collector. Because, you know, ducks have got a bill. Number 9, I reckon. I've seen, there's a place down the road from us. Here's an old tavern that the fellow that runs it, he ran a scuba diving place there for a long time. There was a rock quarry, and they had scuba diving school in the rock quarry there. They teach people how to scuba dive. And he had a little tavern there, too, and the tavern was called the Diver Down. Diver Down, like, you know, when they put the flag up and they got a diver. I think that'd be a good name for a duck boat. If you like to shoot diving ducks, a Diver Down. I think that's kind of funny. So I threw that in there. The next one, and I've seen this one on a I've seen this one on the back of somebody's pickup truck one time. It had a little picture of a duck blind on there, some guys raising up shooting at something, and it had in fancy writing then blind luck. Blind luck. I think that's kind of funny. If you got a duck blind on your boat, you call your boat the blind luck.
These are good. These are nice.
All right. Number whatever here. The next one, 1, 2, 3, 4. This would be like number 6, and that's the Susie sled. The Susie sled, especially if you one of them fellas that tends to shoot as much brown as you do green, which me and old Lynn, we can't be super picky a lot of times. So I happen to be a Susie slayer on a lot of occasions, but call it the Susie sled. Number five is ducking crazy. I think that's pretty true.
We don't have a name for our boat, so I may have to steal one of these.
But I think ducking crazy would look good across the back of a boat. If you happen to be out in a place where you shoot buffleheads, I think the Buffy Barge would be a good one. Buffy Barge. If you're down south somewhere, you could have the Swamp Romper. I think the Swamp Romper would be a good name for one of them big airboats or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How about the Wing Dinghy? The Wing Dinghy. If you happen to have a rowboat of some sort, one of them, I'm thinking like, you know, out there on the East Coast, like old Matt Versace. Them fellas, they have them in wooden rowboats and all that kind of stuff out there. They paddle around in, looking very colonial and East Coast. I think the Wing Dinghy would be a good one there. Now this one, this might apply to you because you shoot a lot of teal. How about the Teal Taxi?
That's good.
And then this one's in honor of my son. I kind of double entendre, because like one of my boys, he calls his brother Chuckle Nuts all the time.
Chuckle Nuts?
Chuckle Nuts, yeah. I think that's kind of funny. I thought, well, that'd be a good name for a boat, too, because, you know, if you chuckle a lot, you feed chuckle at the ducks, it get kind of sound. I think Chuckle Nuts, if you had a bunch of guys, I think we're all kind of chuckle nuts sometimes. So anyhow, there's your top. That's one, two. I think it had 11 of them there. So anyhow, there's some possible boat names if y'all need a name for your duck hunting boat. There's a lot more I could probably say, but a lot of them, I come up with a few that ain't real. They're not real politically correct or decent.
You gonna share them?
I ain't gonna share them, but. I'm sure, people could come up with all kinds of names. But I encourage folks, get out there and name your boat, paint it on the side, then take a picture of it, post it to the North American Waterfowler website.
There you go. You know, I think I like the Bill Collector out of all those. I think that I like that one the best. Yeah. That's nice.
The first one I come up with on the top of the list. Yeah, I like that.
Those are great, man. Those are fantastic. All right.
Most guys, anyhow, need to name your boat. My wife doesn't have any idea how much money I spend on duck hunting. Just put that across the back of the boat.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of guys talk about that.
Money, my hobby.
There you go.
All right. There you go, Elliot.
You got anything else for us tonight?
I think that's it. Just a bunch of names. That's all.
All right. If those of you guys haven't named your boat like me, or you're looking to get a boat, there's some tips for you from Woody about some possible names. I don't think most guys name their boat. I think that needs to be a new trend, naming your boat.
Yeah, it's a shame.
I know Josh at Outdoor Limits. He names his kayaks because I know he's talked about it before, but. I like
as much money as we spend on a boat, it deserves a name.
Absolutely. All right, buddy. Well, thank you for being with us, and I will talk to you in a couple weeks.
All right, I'll be ready.
This has been another Woody's Top 5. Well, there you go. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Remember, frequent the partners. Find me over on patreon.com/freelanceduckhunting. And if you want an entry into comment of the week, find me on Facebook, Instagram, Freelance Duck Hunting, or email me, freelanceduckhunting@gmail.com. We will be back on Monday. I've got a really amazing episode for you where I'm bringing on Freddie King, and we're going to talk about the Mississippi flyway migration, especially down in Arkansas. So I hope that you will be tuning in for that one. Give me a rating. Tell all your friends. Until next time, you've listened to another episode of the North American Waterfowler Podcast.
Educated criminals work within the law. Turns to me to see.